The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Boston Red Sox were able to successfully take two games out of three against the Chicago White Sox. Unfortunately, outscored 13-12. Little check on the standings here. The Red Sox are now 72-71 in third place in the AL East, 10 games back behind the second place Orioles and division leading Yankees. Sox are now fifth in wild card standings, half a game back behind the Tigers and Mariners. Rays are one game behind us, and the Rangers are just 2.5 back. We are the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from scorching hot Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you? And temperature check, please.
How am I doing with regards to the Red Sox? I'm over it. With regards to the rest of my life, big upset victory for the Patriots today, which ruins our draft selection and already screws up our season. So I'm not doing that great, but I'm surviving. My Twitter handle is at JTShill20. And my temperature check is an all-time season low at 3.3 out of 10. For Terry, that's bad. That's a low score, Terry.
It's like you're trying to challenge Terry for like crappiest number today. That being said,
he's going to come in at three. He always comes. He's always a three.
I don't know. I think he might surprise us. Terry, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you? And I don't want you to get, you know, emotional. So please give us your temperature check as well.
Except when I'm excited, I'm a solid eight. But anyway, three is normal. So anyway, there might be some crude themes here today, but we'll keep it somewhat clean. I can be found at Cushman MLB. That's Twitter. Find us on Instagram. Terry Talks Sox on Facebook. Terry Talks Sox on TikTok. I've been obsessed with that app. My last couple of videos, over 1,000 views. And actually, I think right around 1,500. So I'm figuring it out. And you can find some of my abbreviated content over there. Substack blog as well for our in-print content. But I just want to say how great it was on Saturday. I mean, we win the game, and that's not even what was great about it, but you had Don Orsillo in the booth, and it was like it was 2007 again, in a way. And he's still the same energy, same humor, same everything. And it's still crazy to me. Next year will be the 10th year since we've moved on from him, which is crazy, but it's just insane that Ness and the executives, and maybe even the upper levels of the Red Sox ownership, because they do own Ness and 80% of it. It's just crazy that A, they decided Orsillo wasn't good enough, and that B, Dave O'Brien was better. And it's just insane to me. Go back to 2014 and 15. Those were Orsillo's last 2 years. We were last place both those seasons, much like we were last place the last two seasons. I guarantee you Orsillo's ratings just absolutely destroy O'Brien's last place team versus last place team. it was just way more entertaining with Orsillo. It was still, the Red Sox were still worth watching. They're not anymore.
Yeah, for me, it was like he called a game last week. His voice is so familiar to me still. Calls a great game, energy at the right time, lets a play breathe at the right time. Like, he's the best. And I have forever taken the position that the organization scapegoated the on-field product with part of the off-field product. And Orsillo was fired to make the fan base not talk about the building of the on-field team. I mean, it was one of the most pathetic things this organization has done in my lifetime. I can't think of anything else off the field. The way they handled Terry Francona on the way out the door, releasing the photo that he exchanged with a person he was dating and throwing the pill allegations out there was probably as bad because of the nature of the allegations. But this is right up there. They used Orsillo to scapegoat the on-field product. It's inexcusable. And it just goes to show you what a, I almost swore, what a bunch of crap the personalities in the front office and ownership are, and how they all lean on each other for decisions like this one.
Yeah, it's going to go down, I think, as one of the most embarrassing decisions that ownership has ever made, to blame the announcer for struggles on the field. That literally is beyond illogical. It's borderline insane. And I don't think there's one person with half a brain that thinks that Don Orsillo is the reason why the Red Sox were so bad. It's embarrassing. I think part of Red Sox Nation died, and truth be told, it's never been the same. It'll never be the same. So Dave O'Brien, you know, yeah, sure, he does sometimes a good job, but other times it's just awful, and he'll never be able to hold a candle to Orsillo, and it's not even close. Yeah, Terry, go ahead.
I think Jeremy wanted some
apologies.
Yeah, Jeremy. I mean, could you imagine? So let me just try to say my point from another angle. Could you imagine turning in to watch a baseball season, and the team is so bad that you finish in last place, and you blame the play-by-play guy for not having the fan base turn on the TV? You know, it's ridiculous. I would love to know who made this decision. Like, who was the person at the top that hit the axe button? It's just absolutely pathetic.
I haven't looked it up. I could have done a little bit of fact-checking before I came on, but I think it went up as high as Warner. He kind of made that decision, and he's kind of been the good owner in recent years. You know, he had the full throttle comment and thought he seemed to expect we were going to be more aggressive than we were. But the crazy thing is you look at all the dumb decisions we've made, and it really started with Orsillo, and for them to botch that, why would they get a lot of things right after? It's just hard to wrap your head around. And I think a perfect punishment for John Henry would be to duct tape him to an office chair so he can't, you know, use his hands or anything. Put a headset over his ears and just make him listen to, like, for 8 hours straight, make him listen to Don Orsillo highlight reels. I think that would be beautiful.
He won't care. Yeah, he wouldn't care. It would be a waste to, you know, have, you know, that joy for someone that just doesn't get it and hasn't gotten it for several years. It'd just be a waste. Anything else you gents want to add before we start? No, perfect. All right. Well, naturally, we were able to take 2 out of 3. So why don't we start with our studs? Terrence, you are chomping at the bit. Who is your stud?
I am going to go with Dick Fitz. I had the Criswell stuff up, so let's see. Here we go. So made his MLB debut today. And last I had checked, and admittedly, I didn't really look at it before the game today, he's actually had a pretty good August. And apparently one of the things that helped turn him around was he went from a 25% slider usage to up around 50. And then when you go through his game logs, even if you want to include today's start, going back to his first start in August, on August 2nd, he's made, let's see, 5 there and then 2 in September. He hasn't given up more than 3 earned runs, and that was actually only once. So it's been 2 earned runs or fewer. And then unexpectedly, he kind of gets the call up today. As early as yesterday morning, he had no idea he was going to be starting yet. Apparently, some talk about it got started in the afternoon. They gave him a heads up. It could happen. He was told last night it would, in fact, happen. He would be making his debut. And very solid. I mean, he's a fastball slider guy. I guess that's fine to get you through the month of September. He's going to have a third pitch, as we've seen with other starters previously, Tanner Houck, most notably. And apparently, he's got some elbow issues or shoulder issues. It was told to the media that he didn't recover well from his last start, so they're pushing him back, presumably to the Yankees series, who he pitches very well against. So Houck will go later on in the week if all is well. But that helped pave the way today for Fitz to get in there. And only struck out 2, went 5 2/3. Casas kind of let him down with an error. So Fitz wasn't charged with any earned runs. Regardless, he walked 1, gave up 6 hits, tons of ground balls. He got a couple of key double plays, one in the 4th inning, another in the 5th. So about as good as you can hope, really. It was a very carefully picked start. Obviously, the White Sox, nobody really scary in that lineup outside of Luis Robert. Andrew Benintendi's been hot lately. He did hit a 3-run homer to make that middle game a little bit more interesting, but not a lot of scary guys in that Chicago lineup. Nonetheless, Fitz pitched about as well as you could have hoped. So he was my stud for the series.
Yeah, 2 things stood out to me. One, in the 5 2/3, he only threw 66 pitches, so he was economical. I didn't think the moment was too big for him. And the other thing that stuck out to me was his defense. He picked a guy off first, and he started a double play as smooth as I've seen a Boston starting pitcher start a double play in forever. Like, as soon as he turned to throw to second, I'm like, this ball's going to center field. No. Seed right to the chest, quick turnover, easy double play, like you're supposed to be able to do from fielding practice and spring training. So that, I mean, there was a couple of cool moments. His family made it, and at least on the broadcast I was watching, they kept showing them, and I always liked that. So I don't know what kind of depth he provides as far as, like, you know, a guy that kind of do, like be maybe a like a Cutter Crawford, maybe. I don't know. I've only seen him pitch this one time. I can look at a bunch of stats and get absolutely nothing from it from a big league perspective. If he was given a day's notice and this is the product you get, I don't care if it was against the White Sox, he gave you a chance to win. Casas Olaid the absolute hell out of that ball. So we can talk about that later, I guess, because a quick one step to your left and square up on that thing, it hits you in the chest, drops your feet, and you flip it to first for an out. But everyone already knows how I feel about Casas. So I'll stop there.
Yeah, no surprises there. Super pumped. I mean, I think one of the coolest things to see was a successful double play. You always get a little nervous with pitchers throwing to second nowadays, and he threw perfect perfect throw to second base to get that inning-ending double play. And post-game, he, I believe it was after the game, I could be mistaken, where he said, actually, it probably makes more sense for it to be like before the game. No, I have like a lot of friends here, family here, my high school coach is here, and I think he'd be pretty PO'd if I, didn't throw it to second for a double play if that does pop up. So 5 2/3, no earned runs, only a couple of strikeouts. The first one was a nasty breaking slider. Really nice to see. Couldn't have happened against a better team. So, I mean, this is the perfect start your time in the majors game. There's no pressure. This team is not going to, you know, we're not in the playoffs this year. I think Jeremy and Terry, you can both agree with me that at this point, if people are injured, we can just shut them down for the year. And this is a great opportunity for us to see Dick Fitz and what he can do. So happy to see, what he's done in his only game. This, of course, was one of the three pieces that came over from the New York Yankees when we sent Alex Verdugo packing. And the best part about it now is that even the Yankees want him gone. I said this months ago, and Yankees fans were chirping me, and I was like, guys, the Los Angeles Dodgers got rid of him. We're willing to get rid of him. Just send him away and try to sell him like he was gold. Then the Red Sox got rid of him because of his head case issues. Yankees haven't even had him for one full year. They want him gone. They want him out of New York. So he is going to be the next, you know, journeyman player, insert name here, but he's not going to get it done. Like this is, you know, I think Verdugo might be on the way out. A couple of years, he's done. Anything else you gents want to add?
Yeah. So Alex Cora referenced essentially both of the things that Jeremy did, and both of those plays, the pickoff attempt that was put on actually by the bench coach and executed by Fitz, and then the start of the double play, Cora said, seeing those two plays tells me he's absolutely ready to play in the big leagues. And not just the fact that he executed them, but his mentality. Like, he's a smart baseball player. And, you know, so that was encouraging to see. Hopefully we see him at least once or twice more. I don't see why we wouldn't. But I'm still a little pessimistic on him making the rotation next year right out of spring training, and I think that would be really risky as well.
Low risk, low reward. The Red Sox currently have probably Garrett Whitlock listed as a starter on the depth chart, so we could do far worse than Richard Dick Fitz. Honestly,
well, I just don't see how you pin your postseason expectations on a pitcher like that. I mean, you're losing Pivetta anyway, so perhaps he kind of fills that spot, but you need Giolito and you need one more mid to upper rotation guy via free agency this winter.
You need an ace. You need an ace. You need to fill Pivetta's spot, and you need another starter. If it's Giolito, then you need an ace and you need someone else to fill out and take Pivetta's spot. So you need at least two guys. One has to be your starting opening day pitcher next year.
Yeah. So I see Giolito replacing Pivetta and then us having to go out and get another starter.
That would be more realistic, because I think people are looking at Giolito as the ace next year. But the thing is he's been trash since 2021. Before the injury, he was trash. He pitched for three teams in 2023. None of them could fix him. So I hope we do. He looked okay in a microscopic sample size in spring training before he got hurt. But I think you're taking a lot for granted if you think you're going to get 2021 Lucas Giolito back.
Time will tell. I mean, crap. Look at Chris Sale.
Well, Atlanta.
That's
will,
all I'm going to say.
Atlanta will fix him. We know that.
Chris Sale is going to win a Cy Young and the Comeback Player of the Year award, and it's not even close. He's leading the National League in all three categories. He's leading in the ERA. He's leading in wins, and he's leading in strikeouts. the idiot that made that move, I will never forgive. It's unforgivable. It's a sin. But, you know, I got chirped by somebody online who said, oh, you couldn't possibly have known. It's like, you know what? You couldn't possibly have known that he was going to do what he did or not have done. But you know what? Chris Sale at the end of the day is Chris Sale. And I'd rather have him on my team than not. So I'll leave it there. Perfect. Let's move into Jeremy, your stud, please.
I have absolutely no clue how he gets it done. I can't believe he's even on the big league roster. But Criswell, 5 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 2 earned, 2 walks. He didn't strike anybody out. 79 pitches, lowers his ERA to 4.11. Like, I don't know how he's doing it. I mean, it's obviously change of speed. It's obviously changing the spin rate and all the other things. You can make the same pitch look a little bit different. And when he gives up hard contact, he gives up hard contact. So the 2 runs were in the first, 2 outs. Benintendi rips a ball to right field. And then I believe the next pitch was hit. Still has not landed. Other than that, he shut him down and gave you every chance to win the game. And that's coming out of his last start, which that was the controversial Cora pulling him on the perfect game situation against Detroit. Start before that, only 3 1/3, but he gave up 1 earned. Start before that, 4 2/3, 1 earned. So Cora has him on an absolutely the shortest leash you're going to give an actual starting pitcher. But, I mean, he continues to give you a chance to win. In his last 4 starts, you've had every opportunity to win the game. And with regards to Saturday, they did find a way to get to Crochet, which shocked me. I thought the game was over. I was so frustrated in the moment. And then they came back right away and took a lead by the time we flipped into the second inning. So I don't think he's a big leaguer, but it's a good story. And good for Criswell for giving you a solid outing on Saturday.
Terrence?
I mean, he's basically a number 6 starter. He's the guy that you bring in if somebody goes down. He tops out at, what, 90, 91 miles an hour? Cora has just kind of maneuvered him through the season and I think gotten about as much as you could get out of him. When he's in the situation he's in, you can kind of pick and choose which matchups you're going to put him in with. And he's not a guy you really want to see the order the third time. That's why he got pulled. And I mean, when your bullpen is as bad as it is, as unreliable as it is, I don't see why you wouldn't be tempted to at least try to get him through a third time. If Zach Kelly's just going to come in and cough it up anyway. So it's a tough spot, but he's a cheap option. And I think he's been utilized just about perfectly. And this was a good lineup for him to face. I think he went, 5 innings? Let's see. Yep. Five innings, 6 hits, 2 earned, walked 2, didn't strike out anybody. Strikeout's been a big problem for this rotation in the second half. We're just not doing it. But yeah, not really a ton more to add.
Yeah, I mean, 4 innings in his last game, struck out 5, no hits. This game allows a lot more hits, 6 hits in 5 innings, 2 earned, strikes out nobody. Only 1 real mistake, is able to get the win. And to Jeremy's point, I don't know how he's doing it either, but he is. He's finding a way. 9 innings, 5 strikeouts in his last, you know, essentially 9 innings. He's walked a pair, just 2 earned runs. So he's filling that gap that was left by, you know, whatever you want to use that as an excuse. Rich Hill, gone. Giolito not here, gone. Whitlock injured, gone. So he's been asked to fill major shoes and he just keeps on doing it. Like when we call his name, is he the sexiest name in Major League Baseball? Absolutely not. Are you going to expect 6 innings of shutout baseball every single time? Absolutely not. But it's a serviceable option from time to time. And I won't say anything negative about it. I mean, shucks, if you give 5 innings and not really expected to, you did your job. So quality performance for the, you know, lack of a better term for Cooper Criswell, but you know, hopefully he can continue doing this for the remainder of the year. He's had moments of brilliance. You know, a couple months ago, he went 7 innings strong, only allowed 6 hits, didn't allow a run against Colorado. So he's becoming that Swiss Army knife. He can come in for a long relief. He can come in for a start. He can come and shut the game down. Granted, I doubt you want him to be the guy that's, you know, pitches your 9th inning, but yeah, he's become a serviceable reliever if he ends up staying next year. Anything else you just want to add? Yeah, T, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm actually pulling it up right this second. I'm just trying to see where the Red Sox are in strikeouts since the All-Star break. Where do you guys think we rank in strikeouts?
22 to 27.
I'm going to lean closer towards that 27-28 number because we got players like Tyler O'Neill, who's like almost a guaranteed strikeout, sadly.
Well, I thought we were talking about the pitching.
Oh, what? Are we talking about pitching or are we talking about hitting, Terry?
Pitching. In terms of...
With most strikeouts?
Where do... Like, number of strikeouts overall since the All-Star break, where do we rank?
23rd.
All right, so Jeremy had the range correct. We're 27th right now. However, the Angels and the Pirates play tomorrow like we do and they get more strikeouts, we'll be 29th because we're at 367 since the All-Star break. The Angels and the Pirates are 366, so just one less. And, I mean, week after week, I'm looking at the pitching lines as I'm going through them. Criswell had 0. Fitz had 2. Hauk has had several starts where he's had only, like, 2 or 3. Pavetta's strikeouts are way down. So that just kind of got me thinking. I'm like, where are we compared to the league? So, yeah, we're just not punching guys out.
We're just not that team. Like, you have Cooper Criswell up there, and you got Richard Fitz in there. You had 10 2/3 combined, just a pair of strikeouts. You're not going to win any awards if you have people that are just in there. It's essentially bodies pitching. You know, I'm not asking you to get the strikeout. I'm asking you to get outs. I don't want you to prioritize strikeouts. Go for the team game here. Please just get outs. That's it. I don't care about how. But if it involves you throwing 2 to 3 less pitches an inning, please do that. That's it. Anything else we want to add on Criswell? So my stud for this one was Tyler O'Neill. Always fun when I get to drop his name. Always fun for me. 3 for 4 in that second game, 0 for 7 outside of that, but 3 for 4 with a single, a pair of homers, 3 RBIs, 3 scored, struck out looking on a pitch that I think was a strike. I remember when Tyler O'Neill was done, he was just shaking his head like, no, that wasn't a strike. But yeah, I mean, Tyler O'Neill has consistently been one of our go-to guys. You know, it may not be the prettiest series, but he's going in there and he's getting the job done. It's going to be one of the more interesting contracts during the offseason because he's going to be had for a lot more money than, you know, what he got paid this year. It's going to require 2 to 3 years, and it's probably going to exceed $10 million a year. I'd be shocked if it didn't, especially when we turned down, or Teoscar Hernandez turned down our offer for 2 years and $28 million because we couldn't give him a third year at 14 per. He is going to get more than $10 million a year. The guy is going to hit 30 home runs. He may not have 75 RBIs, but the boom aspect for Tyler O'Neill is going to be insane. I'm still shocked that the Red Sox didn't capitalize on moving him because I really did not see us being a contender. So we're basically going to be letting him walk for nothing. Would he take the qualifying offer? Maybe, but I don't think the Red Sox are going to give it to him. So he's going to be gone after this year. I don't think the Red Sox are going to be able to retain his services. It's going to cost too much. And I think he's going to be too much of an aggravation for a majority of fans that can't stand to see him strike out. He started off like gangbusters, was one of the hottest players in baseball, as I mentioned before, led the league with 6 home runs. He was the first one to 6. Then he got injured, never really came back the same way. He wasn't striking out nearly as much as he was before the injury. after the injury was striking out at record pace. So currently as it stands, he has struck out 137 times in 360 at-bats, and that's in 98 games. Imagine that sample size if he plays a full season. This guy's going to strike out over 200 times, but will probably bang over 35 home runs, maybe close to 40. The guy can do it. Jeremy, go ahead.
He's such a boomer bust player. And the bust is just is the more consistent result for me. Now, this series is a perfect example. If let's say he didn't play, and they're obviously Crochet's a lefty, so of course he's going to play. But let's just say in my hypothetical situation, he doesn't play. He's 0 for 7 with two strikeouts in the series. He plays, it's a lefty, and you know Crochet has not been pitching well, but regardless, he's still a quality left-handed arm. 3 for 4, 3 runs scored, 3 RBIs, 2 home runs. The second one was like just an absolute bomb. It's just there's too much of the 0 for 7 with two strikeouts for me to spend that much money on a guy when you have players in the pipeline that are going to be extremely cost effective for the next 3 to 5 years. The only problem with that, and this is again to go back to the leadership, is everyone else is a lefty. So where is there going to be a righty? For me, and I don't want to go into this too long because we've hit it quite a bit, but you got to get right-handed in the infield. So a Cassis and a top prospect for Vlad Jr. would fix that a little bit, so that you could go with a left-handed stick in place of O'Neill. You'd actually end up in that scenario spending more money because Vlad's going to be a $30 million player plus, but the fix is not easy as a result. For me, thank you for your year. You know, oft injured as well. So the bust is just too often over the boom, and he's not consistent enough. And I think that plays in his RBI numbers.
Terry.
I'm not going to kill the guy. I mean, he had a big game too. We probably lose that game if he doesn't have the game that he had. You know, he had his third or fourth multi-home run game of the year. I'm not convinced he's going to get like a major deal. I think he tops out at 2 or 3 years. I don't know what the annual value would be. I mean, I guess probably in the 14, 15 million range of what Gurriel and Teoscar got. But I think if you're going to put him in their category, he comes out number 3, and it's a large gap between 2 and 3. Like, 'cause they don't strike out like he does. They hit at a better clip. Gurriel might not hit as many dingers as O'Neill and Teoscar, but I feel like the deal worked out as much as I didn't think it would. But look 5 years into the future, what's the narrative going to be on Tyler O'Neill? I don't think it's going to be a good one. I think he's still going to be the often injured player that never really lived up to his potential. And whatever team that gives him that deal, I think there's going to be a lot of remorse in year 1 or 2.
I hear, and I don't find it to be unfounded, Terry, but without looking, if you had to look me in the eye right now and tell me how many multi-hit games he's had this year or multi-home run games he's had this year, what would you say?
6.
All right, that's Jeremy's guess.
I'd say 4.
6.
Is it?
He had 6.
Okay.
He had 6. Coming right out of the All-Star game, he had a pair. And it was just like, okay, cool. Caught fire. Like, he's back again. He's doing this. All-Star game was, we started with the Dodgers right out of the gate. Had a 2-homer game against the Dodgers. Had a 2-homer game against the Rockies. Had a 2-homer game against the Yankees. So he's got 3 2-homer games in the first 3 series post-All-Star break. He is going to command probably more than $15 million a year. People are going to forego the fact that he gets injured a lot. He gets a lot of strikeouts. You shake your head all you want. That's cute and stuff. But he's going to hit 30-plus bombs. And in the right offense, I mean, you think about it. Think about what Teoscar Hernandez was almost not going to get. Imagine him in Boston. He'd be mashing a bunch of home runs. He wouldn't have the RBI numbers that he has now in LA. He's absolutely out of this world. If Tyler Neal is on a team where he has protection, I think he could do damage. I really, really do. And a lot of the damage that he did this year, unfortunately, was with nobody on base. Like, he's got 27 home runs this year. Yeah, 27 home runs and solo home runs. He's probably got 16, 17, something like that. So imagine if there was just one extra guy on base. You're looking at a guy who's at 2770 right now. And who knows, without that injury, maybe there's a couple extra home runs, couple extra RBIs. Maybe he's looking at a 30-80 season so far. No one, you know, we don't know. I mean, it's crazy. The injury thing is a problem. That there's no question. But I think there's going to be a team that will break the bank in the sense of giving him 3 years minimum for a minimum of $15, $16, $17 million. I could very much see him getting 3 for $51 million. I could see that happening.
Reset the market. He hit in front of Duran and Devers all year long. The result of the low RBI numbers is the result of when he hits for power. So
he's also missed a lot of time, Jeremy. He's missed large chunks of time, and that hasn't helped.
No, I mean, that's not disputable. What I'm trying to say is when he's healthy, he's hit 27 home runs, yet he only has like 65 RBIs. Hitting with Duran and Devers on base all year. He doesn't hit in those moments. He's like the anti-Ortiz. And I'm not saying that I don't like the player. And if you could get him for like 3 years, $27 million, I'd probably do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't think he's worth those numbers. And one thing we can all, I think, agree on is that John Henry is not going to pay Tyler O'Neill $15 to $18 million. No. It's never going to happen.
Never going to happen. I agree with you 100%. Terry?
I don't think it's going to happen either, but it wouldn't shock me. Like, maybe Breslow kind of thumps his chest. I mean, what was his best move in terms of free agency or acquisitions, any type of acquisition? It was Tyler O'Neill. So I wouldn't.
I mean, his best move, in my opinion, is locking up Rafaela long term. But you said transaction or
guys that he added this winter, which was his first winter, really. But it's O'Neill, so it wouldn't surprise me if he wants to keep him because I don't know. He just thinks he got one over on everyone and O'Neill's his guy type of thing. But I don't know. It would be insanely stupid. And I think with Story back, with Campbell probably coming up at some point next year, Rafael is going to the outfield. He will get almost all of his starts in the outfield. Duran's going to start every day. You could have an Abreu, Ref Snyder platoon. I don't think they're going to do much as far as right-handed outfield bats, if anything at all.
If anybody thought that we were going to start this season the way that we did with the pieces that we thought we were going to get, I was really hoping that we were going to make some changes, but we just continued on adding in the same places. Little small additions, just a couple million here, a couple million there, not taking huge risks. The biggest risk was Lucas Giolito. 2 years. Was it 2 years, $32 million? 2 years, $34 million, something like that?
No, it was one with a vesting option. No, a player option, excuse me. One with a player. So I guess you could call that a 2 year deal then.
I thought it was 2 year deal from the get go. No. I thought it was 2 years. No, it was just one and one.
It's one with a player option, and then if he exercises the player option, and why wouldn't he? And he, during that player option year, if he reaches 140 innings pitched, that actually vests a second option for a third year.
Right.
It's kind of a wonky contract, but
I'd be shocked if he doesn't opt in for that player option. It's like Chris Sale, you know, when he was injured, he's opting in to get that money, guaranteed monies. Anything else that we want to add to Tyler O'Neill? Perfect. A couple of honorable mentions. There were plenty. Devers went 3 for 10, had a double, couple singles, run scored, drew a couple walks. If I'm not mistaken, I don't remember seeing him strike out. I could be wrong, but I don't remember seeing him strike out.
He struck out twice in the middle game.
Okay, I must have missed that.
No, I'm sorry. Those are walks.
I don't remember seeing him.
No, you're correct. No strikeouts.
Okay.
My bad.
Which is pretty good considering he's playing at like 60%. So I give him a little bit of credit there. He's also hitting 300 for the series. You know, really got on base 5 times in the series. Bernardino, who everybody knows I struggle with, did fine in the series, struck out a pair, inning and 2/3. Slayton came in, 2 innings of work, 3 punch outs. Gordon Weissert, another part of that package for Verdugo. Thank you, Yankees. 2 strikeouts, a hit, an inning and 1/3. Jansen, 1 inning, a strikeout. Abreu, 2 for 8 in the series, had a home run, a double, did have an error, which was not fun, struck out 3 times. And then Wong with an absolute beam over the wall. 3 for 7 in the series, single, double, homer. 1 strikeout. Anything else that you gents want to add for some honorable mentions?
Did you mention Trevor Story?
No, I did not, but I'm glad you mentioned him now. Sure, let's do it.
So, you know, this season we've dealt with this issue where players, one specifically, Tristan Casas, that effectively fought against coming back to help this team. And Trevor Story, and you can talk about his injury history. I'm not going to dispute that. You can talk about his inflated numbers in Colorado. I'm not going to dispute that. But I'm going to give this guy a ton of credit for finding a way back in this season, given the injury. And one thing I haven't heard is like, you know, oh, the grueling process. And this, he hasn't said anything about it. He's back. He went and did his 3-day rehab, and all of a sudden he's 2 for 7. Playing good, capable defense, making the defense better with Rafaela in center, although he didn't play today. So taking apart everything else, and we've all said it about Story, the contract and everything else, the fact that he fought to get back this season is commendable, and I have a true appreciation for athletes that are willing to basically do what he's done, which is, and I'm sure he's not all the way healthy, attempt to come back and help this club. So credit to Trevor Story, in my opinion.
Fair game. Also got a nice little RBI in his return. So no home runs, but you know what? Progress, and you're absolutely right. This is a guy who really bucked the trend in relation to what we were doing with dry swings in our dome. He thought, you know, we thought he was done for the year.
Exactly.
And, you know, to your point, Jeremy, absolutely, you know, dead right. Dead right. He came back and against all odds has shown that even though 2 for 7, couple strikeouts, couple hits, did not get a run, is doing everything he possibly can to help the team, even in a, you know, downward spiral season, for the lack of a better term.
And I could be wrong about this. And Casas, who I do not like at all, was with the team, meaning he had the doctors, the trainers, the stretch, the rehab. He had everything available to him through the club. I don't think Trevor Story was with the club. So he went and got healthy on his own.
Right.
So he put in the work when no one was looking. Didn't say a goddamn single thing. Showed up a month ago and said, guys, I think I'm going to be ready in 3 weeks.
Swear jar.
Oh, did I swear?
Just kidding. Just kidding. We'll let that one slide.
I don't even know which one I said.
It's all good. It's all good. Good fun. No, I think you're right. And I think what's interesting is people are going to hear us talking about Story, and they should be crediting you first, Jeremy, since you brought it up. I don't think anyone thought in a million years that we'd be positive about Trevor Story. Like, full stop. That's it. Done. I don't think anyone thinks that the Bastards of Boston Baseball have the ability to be positive on Trevor Story. I think that's just kind of the narrative that people on Twitter, X, have spun. You know, he did what he said he was going to do. He was going to come back and do everything possible to get back into the game. And he did it.
Well, the unfair thing for Story is when you sign a contract like that, you're going to get the criticism from the fan base and the people that talk about it. And I'm not – look, this isn't about – like if he went 0 for 7 with 4 strikeouts, I'd probably still be making my point. The point here is really specific. He went away from the team, didn't say a single thing, showed up a month ago, said I'll be ready in 3 weeks. And he, by the way, hit in AAA. Like he stacked hits. I think he had like 8 or 9 hits in 3 games or something like that, or 4 games, 5 games. Like he hit. So he comes up, he's 2 for 7. He's not an automatic out. He had a hit in each day. He did strike out 3 times, but like he hasn't seen pitching. He's been hitting effectively for a week. Coming off of that injury, like I think it just deserves comment, especially because that's not the way the rest of the team has been. Certain players, one specifically, Tristan Casas.
Terry, anything you want to add? Nope. Cool. Let us slide into our duds for this one. So, Terry, why don't you lead us off?
Oh, boy. It was between two players. I'm going to go with Jeremy's favorite player, Tristan Casas. Not a great series for him. Let's see. I got his line right here. 1 for 7. He did drive in a run with his only hit in the first game of the series. Did not play on Saturday. He only has 3 hits in the month of September. Not that we're that far into it. Today's what, the 8th, is it? Yeah, so 8 days into the month, he's only got 3 hits. Here's the bad one. Here's the concerning one for me. Since he came back on August 16th, how many extra base hits do you think he has? Not counting home runs.
I think it was 2.
0 to 2 would be my guess.
It is 2.
Yeah, I thought it was 2, yeah.
And they were a while ago at this point. August 27th was his most recent one against Toronto. And then a few days before that in the Diamondbacks series, he had another double. But not really giving you much. Even like runs batted in, just doing the math on the fly here, 7, 8, 9 runs batted in almost a month now. So not really giving you a lot. I guess he still has his presence in the batter's box, but I just think if you attack him with fastballs, what's he really gonna give you? I long term, I'm still optimistic, barring injuries, that he'll be productive. But just in his last 15 games as well, hitting 174 with a 269 on base, 261 slugging. It's just bad. It's just absolute garbage from him since he came back. Dom Smith's been DFA'd twice and would probably give you more than that, I'm guessing. I'm not criticizing, getting rid of him. But the other thing today, I'll give him a slight pass on. I watched his interview post game, and they were talking about the error, and he got right into the science of it. The way the ball was hit, he was expecting a higher hop off that second hop, and it didn't bounce the way it should have been, higher than the first hop, and it had no hop to it at all, and it just didn't have the top spin that he was expecting, and he botched it. I don't know that he's comfortable diving for stuff with his ribs. I don't know that we should even want him to be. So it is what it is. I think the team is just doing what they can do to pull off this miracle run, and it's just not working out. And Casas is a part of that.
Yeah. So with regards to the error, the benefit that a first baseman does not have over the rest of the infield is he doesn't have a throw to make. So that means that effectively, as long as you stop the ball in front of you, you're going to make the play. It's a lot like a catcher blocking a curveball on an 0-2 pitch. You just have to knock it down and keep it in front of you. There's no throw. So The Olay thing, I have no patience for. I get it. They're big leaguers. They make the game look easy. And position, Rafael is a perfect example. He'll do angle cuts and unbelievable things with the leverage in his body to start the throwing motion before he even gets the ball. But that's because he has a throw to make. First baseman, it's different mechanically. It can be simpler. And on that particular play, he didn't want to knock the ball down. He didn't want to move his feet square to the ball and knock it down. That's what I saw. Now, with regards to hitting, he's 1-for-7. I think Cora has acknowledged simply by moving him down in the lineup as low as 7th, not in this series, but in others, that they're not expecting power from him at all. Otherwise, he'd hit in the middle of the lineup. So, you know, and then the antics, I'm not going to get into it. I have like every chance I get, but I think he's a player that a left-handed stick that could be moved for a right-handed stick. I've already talked about Vlad Jr. That may not be the only option. There's going to be other options across baseball. I do think he's highly regarded from an offensive perspective. So I'd like, you know, I'm expecting him and potentially Abreu to be players that are moved in the offseason to balance out the lineup. And I would be okay with Casas being moved.
I'm never going to hate Casas being moved. Two extra base hits in the last couple of, feels like months. Not really acceptable. Not with all the kind of quinky dink weird stuff that's going on that's become like a part of his game. It's just, I'm over it. Like I used to be fun, and now it's just, it's no longer fun watching the at bats because you never know what you're gonna get, man. It's just really disappointing, and his value continues to, you know, deteriorate. The odds of him getting a crazy multi-year contract also continue to deteriorate. Because they don't, you know, they're not going to do this. They're not going to give him the deal that he wants. It is what it is, but yeah, I think, you know, the opportunity of trading Casas to get something good, that's gone. It really is gone. And it sucks. It's sad. You might've been able to package Casas and somebody else to get that deal done for Vlad when he was down. But not anymore.
I think I'm supremely optimistic he's going to come back to spring training healthy. At least as far as his ribs go. Could he hurt something else? Terry,
what are the odds that he injures himself again doing the same thing? Because as you mentioned months ago, the swing is beyond aggressive. If he does the same thing again, like a cartilage issue, then what?
Well, I think he is going to be smarter with his swing and his mechanics and all that. I'd be more worried about him messing up his ankle again versus that.
He's probably more concerned about which mask he wants to wear, not about how the swing is going to be affecting himself. Like that's, I am going to need another year of Tristan Casas because right now the trust-o-meter for me and him, it's not there. And it'll take months before it's back.
I don't think his career is over.
I didn't say over. I said the trust meter is down in my defense. And I reserve the right to change my opinion. There you go, Jeremy. But right now the trust meter is really low, and understandably so. The weird stuff, the interactions with him and Cora, the stuff with the media, and then now just his offensive decline. He's too good a player to just fall apart like this, but it's just not pretty right now. Anything else you want to add, T?
Well, I never change my opinion. I just ignore the fact that I'm wrong for like at least a month, and then I'm like, yep, I was wrong.
You must be a real peach if you get pulled over,
that's
Terry.
That's my way. I'm very cool and calm when I get pulled over, actually. I got a great record of not getting tickets.
Me too. If we just count 2021 and beyond. Moving right along, Jeremy, who is your duds?
So I never thought at the beginning of 2024 I would say I miss David Hamilton. But with him out of the lineup, the dud is second base. Not the base, Charlie, the position. So Valdez is not a big league player, okay? He's not. I think we can all agree on it. He's there by necessity. He's 1-for-5 with a walk, 2 strikeouts. He didn't play in the middle game. Romy Gonzalez did. He went 3-for-4. He's been a first baseman platoon. I don't think Romy's getting enough at bats. That's not the topic, but that's something that I believe in. And then Sogart, he's there for defense. He played twice, no at bats. Second base is just a complete hole. And Story coming back has not made that any better. It hasn't moved anybody over there. It moved Rafaela back to center field, which makes us better defensively in the outfield. But second base, especially because Valdez is so bad defensively, and I know he turned a couple double plays, and he made a play in the hole where he left his feet and threw out the runner. But no offensive production. The defense, just generally speaking, is not good. It's a serious problem, and it's something they have to address in the offseason. They can't have this situation at second base again next year. It can't happen.
Terry?
I was just looking up where we stand since Hamilton got injured. So we've won 3 games since he's gone on the injured list. So that's 3 out of 10. And I'm not really blaming it on him necessarily not being in the lineup, but the dude was a spark plug. He made stuff happen, especially when he got on base. Same level of anxiety that Jarren Duran gives teams. Because if Hamilton wants second base, he can take it. And I think he and Duran were tied around 30 stolen bases at one point. And the impressive thing about that in regards to Hamilton is he starts way fewer games. He sits against a lot of lefties, and he, you know, was still basically matching Duran in the stolen bases thing. So, like Jeremy says, he is missed, and it's painful seeing Valdez up there. If Emmanuel Valdez is your starting second baseman, your GM didn't do his job at some point, whether it was during the winter, whether it was during the season, as far as acquisitions go. And then I gave a take. I think I did it on one of the recent podcasts. I mean, there's risk during the winter when you're making a signing or an acquisition. There's risk when you're making an acquisition during the season. There was zero risk in bringing up Christian Campbell. And his floor is much higher than Emmanuel Valdez. I mean, worst case, they put up similar numbers. Best case, he's off the charts and re-energizes this lineup, especially from the right side. So I don't understand the day-to-day operational aspect of how they decide what this 26-man roster looks like and who plays that middle infield. To me, it was a no-brainer to call up Campbell. And if he lives up to the hype, he's just going to get an extension anyway. So I'm not worried about the service time.
So, Terry, you talked about it. Since he's been out, his last game was the 28th before the broken finger. 3-7, or the last 10, including a 5-game skid, 3 straight against the Mets. You lose that dual threat, you know, Swiss Army knife, second baseman, super speedster, getting on base, the occasional home run. And this is what you're about to face. Baltimore for 3, New York for 4, Tampa Bay for 3, Minnesota, Terry, you think they're falling apart. followed by Toronto and then Tampa Bay for another three. We are not going to finish this season on a high note. A high note would be if we win game, 162 on the 29th of September. It is going to be bloody these next seven games. I'll be happy if we can win one, maybe two. But man, oh man, it's like one thing after another. I want no part of some of these future games. It's brutal. And, Valdez with his little softball stance, he's trying so hard to be like the mini Juan Soto. That is not working. So try something different. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. It's not working. Change your stance. Change your mental game. It's a poor excuse at second base when we have him there. And, Jeremy, again, right, when he was there, 1-for-5, had a single, drew a walk, whatever. Hamilton would have probably gone 2-for-4, 2-for-5, stolen a base, scored a run or two, been a lot more dynamic on the infield. I hate watching Valdez playing second base. I've seen it live twice this year, and it's excruciatingly bad. He doesn't run some plays out all the way and allows opposing runners to advance because of poor play. And sure, sometimes they cancel out because of a double play, but had you just done the job the first time around, you make it easier on everybody around you. So Valdez, I'm pretty much out on him. If he doesn't come back next year, I'll be okay. It would take major strides forward for me to say, yes, please bring him back. Anything else you gents want to add? Perfect. So for my dud, this goes to a former player who had a cup of tea, because I don't even want to say a cup of coffee. Our third base coach, Kyle Hudson, who used to be our first base coach, but has since moved over to third in 2024. He's also the base running and outfield instruction coordinator. That's terrifying, because you decided to send Jaren Duran, who kind of choked a little bit at second base, like, I got to wait to see, and then was on his way around third. You're halfway down third base. How you don't notice that he's going to be out by eight paces is beyond me. You have one job, and you're supposed to be the base running instructor? Good God. It is not just upper levels of management that need to be overhauled. Get this guy out of there. I am so sick of seeing him send people home that end up getting thrown out because of just sheer stupidity. Like, Jaren Duran wasn't going to be safe on that one. He would have had to bobble the ball. He would have had time to bobble the ball, get the ball, and still tag Jaren Duran out. Jaren Duran was out by 5 feet before even coming remotely close to home base, like home plate. It was so stupid. It was absolutely dumb. And granted, the outcome of the game, maybe grander scheme of things, it wouldn't have changed anything. We still would have lost, but we would have been up 1-0, and maybe it would have been a different situation in the ninth inning. You're up 3-2 in the ninth inning as opposed to tied 2-2. And we just choked that one away. It was just pathetic, stupid. It was an easy win. We had it. We just blew it. And Kyle Hudson, I'm giving him the loss on game three of this series. Terry, anything you'd like to add first? And then we'll move to Jeremy.
Not a ton. I mean, the crazy thing to me was the ball was in the air going home when Duran's foot was still on the third base bag. So there was no, like, he was out by probably 30 feet tops. And Carlos Feblis was really bad. I mean, he had a number of blunders and kept his job until last winter when Breslow came in. I don't know if he picked Hudson or if that was a Cora move, but either way, Feblis, I think, ended up in Toronto as their third base coach, if I remember right. We saw him pretty recently, I know that. But yeah, you have to be a little bit smarter. Part of it's on Duran too. I mean, he should have been a little bit more situationally aware as well, but it was pretty stunning to see him out by that much.
I mean, it wasn't even close. It really wasn't close. I mean, 8-9 paces minimum before. I mean, he stopped short of the plate. He's like, if I'm Jaren Duran, I'm tempted to just turn around and be like, really? You sent me on this? This is dumb. Jeremy, go ahead.
So the whole thing was also highlighted by during the next at bat, Abreu gets thrown out in one of the worst third base stolen attempts I've seen in some time. For me, the third baseman's a lot like an offensive lineman. They're doing their job, you never talk about them. And then when they don't, it's for some atrocious mistake. And with regards to this team specifically, the 2024 Red Sox, this team has built its offensive personality on aggressive base running, and they have largely bailed themselves out by being that good at it. Rafaela, Duran, obviously, but Wong's a very good base runner. Abreu is usually a pretty good base runner. They're exceptional, especially Rafaela and Duran, at utilizing sliding to avoid tags, whether it be on the throws up the line, they're going to slide inside, and obviously opposite if the throws on the other side. They're just very situational in that way. And time in and time out, they get bailed out. And there have been a bunch of plays at the plate this year where the ball has beaten the runner and yet they still score the run. I think O'Neill in this series had a head first slide where he should have been out and the catcher just didn't catch the ball. Or lost it in the transfer to the tag. So that particular play, there's no excuse for it. Like Terry said, like, even if he's waved in, Duran should have turned his head around once he rounded third base, saw it, and stopped. So the fact that Duran continued on and he was waved in, it was just really, really bad. With that said, this team's foundation is in base running, and they have to be aggressive and press the envelope for it to be effective. And so, you know, again, it's like a lineman in football. When they're just doing their job, you never talk about them. And recently we've had to talk about this, the third base coach, but you know, it's a tough spot. And I prefer my third base coach to err on the side of aggressiveness. And so with regards to that, generally as a philosophy, I don't have an issue.
The issue I have with being aggressive is when you're aggressive and stupid. And that was negligent, you know, just stupid. And Fabulous used to do this too, where it'd be
that play. I'm not disagreeing with you. That play was stupid.
It was stupid. He had absolutely no business. And I get it. Like maybe you peek to see where the ball is. I know I always do because I never trusted my third base coach. And I was thankful of that because it was almost always, oh, he's fast. Send him. Yeah. But if I get thrown out at home or if I get injured for some stupid play trying to be safe, I'm going to be pretty PO'd. So, yeah, this was just it was just dumb. There's nothing else to say. It was dumb. Terry, anything else you want to add?
Yoshida sucks lately too. I know you're gonna get into dishonorables, but dude's hitting 235 with a 291 the last couple of weeks. Even worse than that, way worse than that in the last week. So. He had his nice little hot streak, and I was hoping he'd kind of have a hot September here, and, you know, with the pipe dream of maybe moving him, but he's literally pouring cold water on that.
Yeah, so this month, 3-for-20, hitting 150 with one extra base hit, which he did get today, thankfully. But you're right, he struggled. He didn't do great against New York, but honestly, I don't care. I mean, Yoshida's been one of the three biggest bats in this lineup for the past 2 months. I'm not going to poo-poo him because he's got a slow start for the month of September. I just won't do it. Dishonorable mentions. Chase Shugart, 1 1/3, 4 hits, 3 runs, 3 earned, a walk, a pair of strikeouts. Zach Kelly, 1 1/3, 1 hit, 5 runs, 5 earned, a walk, and a strikeout. And then if you want to say Jaren Duran, 2 for, you know, he was 2 for the series, I think, if I'm not mistaken. It didn't work out, you know, 2 for 12, you struck out a couple times and then just that ugly send and you went with it. And Kelly, I want to get back to that one. Kelly in the third game, you could see him getting flustered and frustrated and it was just disheartening to watch because the not covering and just not playing your position, you know, you don't, as the pitcher, you don't just pitch. you also got to sometimes play backup, and that wasn't happening. And it was just unfortunate. He got blown up in this one. And that's very unlike Kelly. He's been better this year. Overall, we saw his ERA jump. It was, you know, under three, and now it's sitting at 3.58. He had an incredible month of August, you know? So one really poor game, and now his ERA for this month is astronomical. It's, I don't even know what it is. He's allowed, what is it, seven earned runs in four innings. So it's over nine. It's just not good. Anything else that you guys want to add? I know you mentioned Yoshida Terry. I don't think there's anything we need to talk about with him because it's just unlucky. Jansen did have a good save, but there's been like the miscommunication because he was listed as day-to-day. Then he was available, and I think there's been a little bit of lack in transparency there. So hopefully we'll get a little bit more of that for the upcoming series, and everything will be good. If that is all, we will wrap it here from all the Bastards. Have a great one. Take care.